Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 58 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
Well, that was nearly a take two.
Yeah, we're in a rush today, so I'm not even going to bother hitting re-record.
Yeah, it's weird because we're in a different room again, isn't it? We seem to be moving around. We've become gypsies.
I know.
So it's a bit echoey in here.
Well, our usual studio, we're preparing for number two. It's a few months away still, but...
Yeah, no, my studio, I'm hoping, will be finished by the first week in September.
I thought coaches and personal... like therapists and all that, like, aren't supposed to use the word hoping. You're supposed to be, I will.
No, I'm definitely hoping in this case. If I say I will, then you're going to hold me to it.
We've got a set deadline. We'll be recording it in the coffee shop next time, I think.
Yeah. That'd be good, actually.
That'd be good.
Yeah, maybe we should do that.
Yeah, we could do that. Get a nice little ambience in the background. Yeah. Espresso machine going off.
Yeah. And they're good people in the coffee shop, but we should actually have them on... I nearly said on camera, on microphone.
What, the networking gang?
Yeah.
Well, next week we are having one of them on, but we'll talk about that later on.
Yeah.
What have you been up to, Sean? Did you get a good week?
I'm having a good week. I think what I've been doing is over-exercising. I got up to running a marathon every week in bits.
Yeah.
And then hit a fatigue button last week. And Conrad said to me, because I've been doing more than he suggested that I do, see, so I've been naughty.
You actually stayed in bed past like 7 a.m. at one point, I believe.
Yeah. No, 8 o'clock.
Oof.
Yeah, which is really rare for me. I'm needing more sleep, which he sees as a good thing.
Yep.
Because it means that I'm working the body, muscles need repair, stuff like that. But I call it a rest week. He's calling it... a kind of a catch-up kind of rehabilitation week,
okay,
kind of thing. But I'm only doing two runs in one exercise class this week, which sounds bizarre me saying that, because last September that would have been a nightmare.
But that's
like an easy week now.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'm on a recuperation.
Very good. Well, we saw you on Saturday, didn't we? Around at your house. We came around with the fam. It was a good little catch-up, because usually we just get together and just chat about psychological issues, don't we?
Yeah, but, we talked about real issues.
Yeah, that's cool. And I'm still buzzing off last week's episode.
It was brilliant.
Interview with Chris or Vijay Kadampa.
It was good. It was lovely.
It's a good one. Some good feedback about that one, didn't we?
Yeah. I've got several people that I know that are Buddhist who have come in and said to me, you know, wow, that was really good. Enjoyed that.
Cool.
Yeah.
But we got some more guest interviews lined up.
Yeah.
One of which next week, actually, which I'll tell you more about later. Yeah. We're talking about worry this week. But before we do, first up, check out the blog post, liveinthepresent.co.uk, which is a kind of a written version of what we're about to discuss, because I appreciate not everyone is...
Don't worry. Be happy.
That's enough of that. Yeah, that's enough of that, Sean. Bless you.
I'll bring my guitar next time.
Check that out if you can. Obviously there's lots of cool freebies you can sign up to on the website as well and learn all about us. If this is the first time you're getting into the show, welcome along. We've got some listeners that are starting to do some really cool things. There's a website called learningtobehere.wordpress.com, and that's one of a regular listener and someone who's kind enough to buy our book Live in the Present, who's going through each step in the book, as all the readers will do, but they're actually documenting their progress online on a little website.
It's brilliant.
Well, it's going to be a big website at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Really fascinating reading that. It's a great idea, actually, as well.
So we
should do some kind of write-up of how people can do that and get set up with a little website.
It would be useful to have something where people could share experience.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing is when you run the course, when we run the course, it's the idea that each week or in each step, you've got people that are sharing their experience and sharing their expertise that they're developing, which is good. It's brilliant.
Yeah. So we'll put the link in the show notes. But thank you for that one. Really, really interesting. And also, we've had a review on iTunes for the first time in a few weeks.
Good.
Which is nice, because we haven't had them in a while. But JW328 from the UK, 5-star review. "Hey guys, been meaning to write this for a long time, just been hectic." Yeah, I can appreciate that, and I can relate to that. "Love listening to your podcast at night and often on the way to work. I was diagnosed with OCD last year," which, okay, this could be a good episode for you.
Yeah.
"And I've just finished my CBT sessions. It's great to hear a different perspective on the big topics in life. I love the idea of letting go of any issues in the past and not holding a grudge. I'd love to hear a podcast from you on living your dreams but working a day job. Can you do both?"
Yeah,
I think you can. I think a lot of coaches will say you can't really, and you need to drop one and do the other, but you can work both in, can't you?
Yeah, and I think very often people have to do a day job to fund the dream. Uh-huh. So very often you're doing one to fund the other. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's still getting the balance right. But there's something we need to look at.
Yeah. All right. Good. Well, JW328, thanks for taking the time to do that.
And,
We'll work that into a future episode for you. No problemo. Yeah. Before we go on, little disclosure, my son is upstairs. He's in the house, isn't he? He's in the building. If you hear any wax or thuds, or if he's fallen down the stairs,
The thing that was interesting about last week's podcast, and it's made me think about things for the future, is that when we were recording it over at my place, there were all kinds of weird things, like ambulances going by and stuff like that.
Yes.
They came into the recording and you could hear the birds in the garden and stuff like that. And it made it very real in a different way.
Mm.
And maybe...
I liked it. I liked editing it. I liked listening back in there.
Yeah, maybe being in the confines of a studio that is kind of deadpan silent.
Yeah.
Isn't so good.
Yeah.
So maybe we do need to go to the coffee shop and do one.
Maybe we should do one there.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Let's do it. Yeah. Right, let's go on to this week's topic, which is worry. Now, is worry just like a rebranded anxiety? I'm going to start with that question.
I think that worry and anxiety, let's say that both of those things are normally about projecting forward and worrying about what's going to happen next. But an anxiety is definitely about living the future and the present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we can be worrying about things that we've done. So worry as a kind of anxious state can either be to do with the past or the future, whereas anxiety as a problem tends to be projecting forward. Yeah.
Are you a worrier, Sean?
No.
That's a silly question, though.
No, I'm not, no. No. I'm fascinated by people that worry because I can't see the point. I don't see the point in it. It's like I used to watch my father jumping around being a twit when I was younger, when he used to get angry. And I used to, as a kid, I can remember looking at him and thinking, why on earth are you doing that? You know, what on earth is the point? And I see that now. And it goes back to Honda 50 stuff for me. It's like the journey is the same and the outcome is the same of whatever task you're undertaking, whatever bit of life you're living. It's up to you whether you sort of scream and shout all the way there, whether you whistle and enjoy it. It's the same journey. And what are we worrying about? I mean, human beings have this massive capacity, this creative capacity to solve problems, which means that whatever we're faced with, however terrible it is, we have the capacity, either individually or collectively, to make it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Or to make it as right as it can be.
Yeah.
I mean, so what are we worrying about? What's the problem?
I'm universally acknowledged as one of the most chilled out people in the world.
Come on.
I'm top 10.
There's a competition.
But that's what people say about me. He's so chilled out, but I do worry about things. I kind of bottle things up a little bit in that respect. But it's nothing major. The classic one for me is, I don't feel my iPhone in my right pocket. I'll start to worry about where it is. I just had a bit of panic then before we came on, didn't I? Have I left it at the coffee car?
Yeah.
But I found it.
Yeah.
But, I'm capable of worrying about things, but in my family as well, on my wife's side in particular, there's kind of a history of worries, actually. It's quite interesting. We were talking with her before we came on about whether it's genetic, but you think it's...
I think it's learned. I think that whenever you get someone who has a lot of worry disorders, if you then track it back, you find that their parents or a parent had it, or a prominent sibling, for some reason. And then if you track it back, you usually go back to the next generation. It's usually passed on.
Yeah. Genetic issues, that's just a different type of learning, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's DNA learning, isn't it? But, I get your point.
Yeah. But the thing about genetic... any genetic situation that you're in gives you a propensity towards certain kinds of action. It doesn't mean that you have to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may have genetic structures that mean that it's easy for you to eat loads of food and put on loads of weight. But if your consciousness intervenes, then you can overcome that genetic predisposition.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think that there is a limit to the effect that genes have on us.
So that classic line of yours, Sean, what you feed grows and what you starve dies. So the worry is a habit.
If you feed it, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. I can never remember the prayer, the Serenity Prayer, which is the one about, you know, give me the knowledge to understand what I can change and what I can't, you know, to know the difference and all that kind of stuff. And it's like that, isn't it? Because most of the things that we worry about are things that we can't do anything about.
Yeah.
You know? And that law of allowing comes into that, you know, just letting things be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some people are good at worrying about themselves and some are good at worrying about others.
Well, I came across a website when we were talking about this, which I've put up as my resource. But on there, they talk about distortions, about how we distort our common perception.
Uh-huh.
And I've kind of played with that a bit and kind of moved it around. I've given them a credit on the blog, and I've put it down as the resource because I think it's a good website to go and have a look at.
Cool.
But they separate the distortions out into a series of areas. I've added a bit, but it's common distortions would be what we think of all or nothing, or black and white thinking, life or death. You know, that everything is dramatically one or the other, that there's no shades of grey in between.
Yeah.
You know, if I was going to own any of this, it would be that kind of thing for me, in the sense that as a kid, it was all black and white. You know, either the old man was in a good mood and we're all okay, or he wasn't, and then we were in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And life felt very much like that, very black and white. And I can see that in me now, that tendency to be a bit like that.
Yep.
You know, and having to work at feel the shades of grey in between,
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff. Do you feel the shades of grey, are you?
I guess I'm a shades of grey kind of guy.
Yeah.
Not much of a worrier, though, yeah. What have I got here? Oh, yeah, I've been reading a lot about death of late.
All right, yeah.
Which is always good fun. And I've got this idea that, yeah, maybe all worries stem... Oh, there goes my phone. All worries stem... Oh, hang on, what are they after? Reduce your debts by a considerable amount. Super simple, highly effective service.
Now, that's a sales tag, which is based around the idea that you're going to be worrying about that.
Yeah.
How much of advertising is about picking up on people's concerns and worries and then trying to fill the hole?
Yeah. Flipping that debt, oh, man, I've got that credit card debt, gee whiz.
Yeah, got to get rid of that.
Or to opt out, text stop. Never text stop to those things, by the way, a little tip for you, because that means that they'll then get onto the fact that it's a real phone number and they'll just sell your number on and make more money out of it.
Never. And then you can really worry about that then.
Never unsubscribe or text stops these things, yeah, because they've got more data in the end.
Yeah.
Kind of sidetracked there.
Well, that's an interesting one, because the next one on my list is overgeneralizations, as in it will always be like this.
Okay.
Yeah, and you could do it, but maybe you just did that with that. Never do this, never do that, because it will always be like that.
Yeah.
And once we get into that kind of thinking, it leads to that kind of repetition of behaviours, like everything's a done deal. You know, it always happens to me. You know, nothing ever works right.
How far down can, when you're in the spiral of worry and despair, how far down can you go? Can it just take you a lot deeper and deeper, or are you just swirling around?
I think it takes people down to the blackness of suicide sometimes. You know, right. if life becomes completely, if you're completely helpless within it, there can come a point where there is no point.
Yep.
So people do go into those very, very dark spaces and worry about things.
Well, that's where you got to give a clever guy like yourself a call. Or,
yeah, give me a call. The thing is that if the energy in our system flows through, and it's going to flow through in any particular direction, then how about we get it to flow in the ways that we want it to, because the energy is going to flow anyway. It's like watching the river flow by. And because people have learned to let their life energy flow up through this anxious, worrying, concerned bit of themselves, we know, it's my classic, it takes 30 days, it takes another 60 days, 90 days in order to change the way the river flows.
Yep.
Yeah, and anybody who's listening to this who has any of these worrying kind of, I will use the word disorders, because normal worry keeps you safe. That's awareness. Yeah, worry disorder is when it starts to intervene in your everyday thinking and becomes an obsession.
Yeah,
a bit like the person that has put the review up, they were talking about the OCD issue and having CBT. Now, CBT is great if you can see the cognitive structure around the obsessive worry that you have.
CBT is cognitive behavioural therapy, yeah. For those that don't know.
Yeah. The thing is that when something is emotional and it's not cognitive, you need a more of an analytical approach to it. And it's what Carl Jung described as something inside you but outside of your control. And that's something that we tend to look at in terms of people trying to find a reason for why they feel the way they do. So they feel bad, and maybe they feel bad, they feel agitated, they feel anxious, and maybe it's because their blood sugar's low. Maybe they had too much to drink last night or whatever. And they feel this sense of panic or this sense of uncertainty or unease or this kind of anxious feeling in the pit of their stomach. And they look around them to find something to relate it to, and it may be a person or experience or an object, or it could be a colour or an orange or a banana or whatever. And once they make the association between that feeling and the object, the person, or the emotion, whenever they experience it, they get repeat this state of anxiety, this state of emotion. They start to worry about things. So then they start to fear the banana.
Yep.
Because they know that when they see the banana, it's all going to come back. Yeah. Once you make that emotional cognitive relationship, you're stuffed. You have to uncouple it and break it. Yeah, and that's an analytical thing. It's not a cognitive thing. And so it's more emotional. And in that case, my experience is that CBT isn't that helpful.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I was talking about death before that text interrupted. Do you think all worry and anxiety stems from the idea that people can't get their heads around that they're going to die one day?
People do. There are sort of schools of philosophy that would say that. I don't know that. I don't go with that particularly. I mean, I think people probably avoid concepts of death until either someone near them is dying, or they're actually dying themselves.
Yeah.
I think we do ourselves a whole load of favours if, at Will's age, as he's learning to converse and learning to interact with other people, that in that primary phase we addressed issues like death.
Mm-hmm.
And dying, you know, whether it's stories about, you know, your pet dying or whatever. And I think that's a good thing about keeping pets when you're young, is that pets do die.
Yep.
Yeah, so we learn about the issue of things coming and things going, the issues of loss and bereavement and stuff like that.
Yep.
But death, I mean, we've talked about it before. I mean, most people, when push comes to shove, will say to me, the issue of dying isn't the problem, it's how you die that is the problem.
Okay.
So they can worry about that.
Or the people dying.
Or themselves. You know, say someone has had people in the family that have died of cancer,
mm-hmm.
and then they have this worry that they might be genetically predisposed to cancer as well.
Yeah.
And then they're worrying that they're going to experience the kind of death that they've witnessed from someone else who died in a difficult situation.
Yeah. I remember one of my early experiences of worry, and as a kid, I don't think I was much of a worry as a kid, but my dad had a brain tumour when I was about 10 or 11. That's quite a big deal, obviously. It was a bad one as well, or a big one. He's all right now. But I remember when I was about maybe 11 or 12, a year or two after it, I got a headache. I had a headache. It wasn't even a really bad one looking back. But I remember being really sick with worry that, Mum, what if I've got a brain tumour? What if I've got a brain tumour?
Yeah.
Imagine it.
Yeah.
That was one of my early experiences of worry.
Yeah. When I say things like, you know, we're all going to die. We're all going to die. And that's true. We are all going to die. And people say it's okay to say it, but you're not doing it.
Yeah. You're not dying.
You're not dying at the moment.
Well, hurry up, would you?
You get on with it. But it could be that you're going to feel different when you're actually there. I mean, the thing overall is, if we can come to terms with the fact that we are going to die, so that we can deal with it in a way that isn't cognitive but is emotionally comfortable,
Yeah.
Then when that point comes, it isn't a shock for us. It's not a surprise. We can go with it.
Mm.
And I see that as that image of being able to sit on the bank and observe the river flowing by. So the joke in Vipassana meditation is the Vipassana meditator is so able to body focus that they have that experience of, oh, this is a strange thing. Oh, it's a heart attack. That's interesting. Yeah. Oh, death. That's it. I've had this one before. That's good. As you observe it happening, mm-hmm. as inevitably it does.
Yeah.
You know, if you spend your life avoiding things, then they become a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But worry and anxiety are based usually around anticipation. They're not based around actually doing something. If you're scared of flying, you can live the fear of flying for weeks or even months before you get on the plane.
Sure.
Because you keep anticipating what's going on.
Yeah.
As opposed to actually being on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
You know. In Shinto, they have a thing, Shinto, Japanese philosophy, where they have an idea of boxing things, where if you're going to go to the dentist next Wednesday, you put it in a box and you don't worry about it, you put that on the shelf, and then next Wednesday you can open the box and panic as much as you want, but there's no good panicking on Monday and Tuesday. You can only panic on Wednesday.
Yeah, you've got other things to worry about on those days.
Yeah. And I think that's quite a good way of looking at it. Maybe by the time you get to open the box, you actually don't need to panic.
Yeah.
Because you haven't had all the anticipation of worrying about it before you get to Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. I mean, yeah, I've got a family member as well who had a procedure on their eyes recently. I think it was laser treatment or something, one of those things. And I think she was all right, actually, with it leading up to it. But the build-up to it on Facebook and whatever it was, she was kind of counting down the days almost. And she wasn't actually too worried about it, but there was a possibility that if she had been just building up to it and to this huge crescendo, you know, there's that 2 weeks before when you start to build up to something like that. What's the point? But it's easier said than done, isn't it? So what can you do? You've mentioned then you can put it in a box, but is that practical for people that are actually mired in some worry right now?
But the problem for us all is that when we're feeling good, we don't feel the need to develop the skills to deal with feeling bad. When we're feeling bad and we suddenly think, oh, I need to have these skills now, it's too late and it's too difficult to learn. Whereas if all of us learned to zone, we talked about that before, for me it's meditation, for you it's doing something more physical.
Mm-hmm.
But in zoning, your system flattens out. It becomes all the emotions disappear as you're starting to focus in your zone.
Yeah.
If people learn to zone when they are okay, that's the easiest time to learn to zone. When things go wrong, it's easier to zone because you've already got the habit of doing it. Yeah, it's too late once you're in it.
Right.
Which is why if you talk about death and come to terms with death before you go through the process of dying, it's no good once you start dying thinking, I need to come to terms with this now. It's easier if you do it before.
So when you're feeling really bright and happy, that's when you should start reading about death and getting ready
well,
for
yeah,
it.
Well, yeah, when you're feeling good is when you need to develop the skills to deal with feeling bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's when you've got the energy to do it. But it's the last thing, it's counterintuitive, it's the last thing that people do. Why do I want to go and sit down and learn to meditate or go and learn to run or do whatever when I could be doing this other stuff? It's only when we feel bad that we feel the need to do it.
Yeah.
And then we haven't got the energy or the will to do it.
Mm. Okay, yeah. Cool. Let's get back on this list then. Where are we up to? We've got discounting the positive. Is that something that...
You just
zone out and black out all the good stuff completely when you're in a worrying mood, or I do.
But when you discount the positive, it's like something good happens, and you say, so you've just got a first in your degree, you know, and you can't say, wow, isn't that good? I got a first. You say, oh, there must have been some stroke of luck there. Could never be able to do that again. Oh, my God.
Phew.
Yeah. So that I can't actually accept the positive. It's a bit like someone says to you, I think that you're really lovely, and you think, oh, what do they want? That's mm-hmm. it. You know, you can't allow the positive. You can't receive it. You have to focus on it with a negative. You know, someone says to you, that's a lovely dress, and you can't just say, yes, it's nice, isn't it? You say, oh, no, I got a discount from so-and-so. I got it really cheap. You know, you put it down. And
yep.
It's like devaluing the positives around you all the time, as opposed to enjoying them.
Yeah, and jumping to conclusions, which is one of the next points about...
Yeah.
yeah, just yeah, ignoring a load of factors and just hopping straight to something else that
yeah.
you could quite easily look at
yeah.
a brighter side.
But that's a bit like you having a headache and then assuming that you've got brain cancer.
Yeah.
You know, you've got an ingrowing toenail. That's how they're going to amputate my leg.
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to living in the present and being in the moment with it rather than doing this worrying, projecting forward stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And being okay about how things are. I mean, one of the things about our bodies is that most bodies in most situations have a natural repair mechanism where if you damage it, you cut it, all these things, these agencies rush around in your body and repair the hole.
Yeah,
you know,
how cool is that?
It's the way it works, yeah. You break your bones, they mend. Yeah, it's when we interfere with our bodies. And lots of things like cancers, I'm sure, are to do with the kinds of things that we eat.
Yep.
The kind of lives that we lead. So much evidence about people that live in unindustrialised situations, how low their cancer levels are,
yeah.
as opposed to us.
Yeah. We got catastrophizing here as well, if I said that right.
I
guess my headache to brain tumour is a good example of that. I mean, I've never been that much a fan of flying, actually, though I do it. Well, I've done it plenty of times. I don't let it stop me do anything at all. But, yeah, I don't like flying. I think I'm quite on a flight. If we hit a bit of turbulence, I think this is something. This is kind of a stoic kind of point of view that I've developed. But I've been reading up about stoicism recently. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I just kind of assume, oh, it's turbulence. We're going to die. The plane's crashing. I've had a good life.
Yeah.
And I start going through all that in my head, just when we hit a bit of turbulence. Yeah, that's catastrophizing. Bethan's the same, but with hair straighteners. If she goes out and she's left her hair she thinks she's left her hair straighteners on, which she never has, ever. I just think, oh, well, you know, the house burns down, so what?
That's why we pay insurance.
Exactly, we're insured. My laptop's in my bag. I don't need anything else.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And that's a non-worrying scenario, isn't
yeah.
it?
So yeah. Catastrophizing. Even if you do that, you can get some good stuff out of it, I find. Just assume the worst can happen.
Years ago, 20 years ago, one of the kids, his mate had been hit by a car on a country lane crossing the road, and he's a young kid. And they'd taken off the accident, taken the growth plate off of his leg, which meant that his leg stopped growing. So over time, he had to have a built-up shoe because one leg's growing bigger and bigger. And in the end, he gets to an age where they can do the calculation of how tall he's going to end up being. So what they do is they put this odd opening vice structure into the lower part of his leg, and they break the bone.
Cool.
So every morning he has to turn this thing with handles, I think it was 3 turns, to re-break his leg every morning so the bone would grow. And you grow it 2.5 inches or something like that.
Wow.
And one day this guy's staying over, and every morning he'd have to re-break his leg and clean where the spikes went through. He'd have to clean them with the toothbrush through his leg.
Moly.
And he was really good at it. But the scene pictures where my son, one side of the kitchen, I'm removing a splinter from his finger, and he's going, having the splinter. And on the other side of the room is this guy who's breaking his leg. And the guy on who's breaking his leg is looking a bit kind of grey and sweating, like he did when he broke his leg every day for months. And on the other side, there's my son screaming and shouting and carrying on. And, like, who's catastrophizing here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
How do we see it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit like that versus hair straighteners. Oh, my word. Oh, my word. I want to hop just quickly here to something to do. Well, this relates to my resource of the week, but the news and the media that we all consume and we're all addicted to, well, me and a lot of other people, doesn't help with our sense of worry and dread, does it?
No.
I mean, yeah, what is it? Death, fear, war, famine, AIDS and all that, blimey. Yeah.
But that turns into catastrophization because that's what the media does. It turns it on, it scares the daylights out of us.
Mm.
And there's nothing better from a news point of view of taking someone who's been a security icon like Rolf Harris,
yeah.
who's been a part of so many people's childhoods, and he was that warm, cuddly kind of figure, and suddenly turns into this kind of paedophile character.
He's the bogey monster, yeah.
And the amount of people who have been deeply touched by that, the amount of people that have spoken to me about feeling as though they personally have been abused by him because of the place that he held in their consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. He's the first one that was really kind of been like, I didn't see that coming. I mean, there have been all the reports that's starting to come out now surfacing that, oh yeah, all the people that worked with him, yeah, I knew about that. Oh, he did this to me. Like, what? Why don't you say something? But I know why they didn't, because it's not that easy. But yeah, no, that's... I never met the guy, thankfully, but geez, crazy, isn't it?
I think we are getting to a point in society where people are finding it easier to talk about stuff and to be open about stuff. Therefore, all this stuff is coming out of the woodwork. I think that there is more to come.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly from the work that I've done over the years with the police. I knew about Rolf Harris and this stuff developing with him about 5-7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I knew that there were investigations going on from different work I was doing. And there are other people around that are in the frame. But I'm sure there's lots of people that will also get away with it. I mean, are you aware of the fact that the government have destroyed, people in the government have destroyed documents?
That's all going on in the news at the moment, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that lots of people will survive being found out about things.
It was easier to get rid of stuff then. They just chuck it in a waste paper bin and set fire to it.
Yeah, digital stuff.
No digital trail of emails and hacked phones and all that lark. Yeah.
Okay, one last bit I want to cover before we sign off on this. I want to look at the idea of personalisation.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this a lot, particularly with parents. And it's the idea that the classic for me would be, say you were a smoker and suddenly you've got lung cancer. Right. Yep. So you've got the problem, you've done the behaviour, but I personalise it to me. I start worrying about it because I now think, oh, if only I'd stopped Ed smoking, if only I'd told him and explained to him and stopped him, then he wouldn't be in this situation now. So your problem becomes my problem.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm worried about you, but I make it my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I see parents doing that all the time with children. Yeah, that their child has done something wrong, has done something very bad. Yeah, and the parent feels like it's them that's let them down. Now, I'm sure there are cases where parenting hasn't been good and people have got things wrong because of neglect or whatever. I'm sure there are cases where people have done the best that they can and got it wrong.
Yep.
But they can only do what they could do because that was what they felt was the best thing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they did that genuinely. But there are many, many cases, probably the majority, where because of the free will of the child chooses to do something.
Yeah. You know?
But then the parent takes responsibility for it. So the parent now starts to bear this burden. And I think that society does that to people too. If people are stuck in a situation where socially their child has done something negative, that suddenly they are affected by it.
Okay.
It becomes their problem.
I'm worrying about kids, man. Yeah, I mean, I've got all that going on at the moment. Not that I worry too much, but...
But one of the things that you learn in being a parent, maybe you don't learn, is a child, when the child is not in your care, at any age, from, you know, being a toddler right up to being an adult, you know, to being an old adult, those children are actually enacting free will.
Yep.
And they will do all kinds of things. Yeah, all you can do in life is to ensure that you did the best that you could at that moment. Because if you replay the event, if you were doing the best that you could do at the moment, you couldn't have done any better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if the result of you doing the best that you could was that somebody did something or something happened, you can beat yourself up if you like, but it's not helpful because you were doing the best that you could. It was the way that you saw it at the time. In retrospect, in hindsight, you can be a clever dick.
Yeah.
And say, I should have done things differently, but that's because you have knowledge now and you didn't have that knowledge then.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So then we start worrying about the past.
Okay, cool.
Yeah?
I like that. I've been reading up about Stoicism, as I mentioned a bit earlier on, and there's a great article on my resource of the week, which, shall I just mention that now? Which is The Philosopher's Mail, which is something that's set up by Alain de Botton. He's a philosopher. He wrote a book recently, which I haven't got or read yet, called The News, A User's Manual, which is talks about how the news works and why it feeds our obsession with disaster, blah, blah, blah. But he set up the Philosopher's Mail in response to the Daily Mail, which is one of the top three popular websites in the world. And it looks like that when you log onto it, but it's got really interesting philosophy-type articles, but related to now. So what have we got here? We've got exclusive interview with the soul of David Beckham.
The soul of David.
Yeah, the evils of meritocracy. Loads of really cool articles, and one of them is about the Stoics at the moment, which I've just really skimmed over, but I've read a bit of Seneca, But yeah, one of the values of Stoicism is to wake up in the morning and ponder all the terrible things that could happen and kind of accept it. I'll put the link up and you can have a read yourself, but Stoicism, man, is something I'm starting to find really interesting.
But I think to be stoical is a very powerful resource. I think that's good. The issue of, I'm always obsessed with this, is about how we write our script.
And
by that, I don't think we should kind of naively build a script of, hey, isn't everything wonderful, because there's always issues around. But it's not the issues, it's how we respond to them.
Yep.
And there may be bad things that happen today. That's not the point. What do I do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, friend of mine yesterday that I work with was in a car accident. A car was written off, someone hit her. And she's going through all kinds of trauma, post-trauma from that, understandably.
Yep.
But it's, okay, the accident's happened, what do I do now?
And
I'm sure she would do the positive things because we'll work together. And she will let it go.
Sure.
And not hold it.
Let's hope so.
But that's the thing. It's not what happens, it's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you hold on to the idea that human beings are the most amazingly creative structures, you know, and problem solving is a creative process. Whatever happens, we can solve the problem. We can get it right.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, even if that means that the problem is that we're going to die, but we can solve the process of dying, so it works for us.
There's some people, clever people working on that.
Yeah.
Even, yeah, trying to eliminate death altogether.
Well, I can you imagine that? You know, I'm 4,000 years old.
I know.
Yeah.
I can actually. I think it'd be really incredible. We'll sort that one day, assume we don't blow ourselves up. What's your resource?
Are you worrying about that?
Yeah, no, I'm not worried. It's going to happen. So, yeah, just flip it. It will eventually. I've seen this timeline of the universe recently.
All right.
So even, obviously, our sun's going to fizzle out one day.
Yeah.
And then all the suns in the universe will.
Yeah.
And then that's all going to implode on itself. So even if we figure out a way of humanity, like planet hopping forever and humanity living, there's a finite amount of time we can live for. The universe is going to collapse.
What they say in the Ayurvedic world is that when the universe is created, Brahman or God breathes out. And once the breath is out, the in-breath starts to happen.
Mm.
And at the point of the in-breath where it all implodes and goes back in, then Brahman breathes out again. It happens all over again.
Wow.
So
cool.
Who knows?
What's your resource of the week here? We've got Health Guide.
Yeah, it's a self-help guide. Really, really useful. Looks a lot at the whole issue of worrying generally. And a lot of resources on there. So go and have a look.
Cool.
It's good.
All righty. Well, we'll wrap it up. But I'm a bit worried because I've got to get off and go and look around at my son's future school. And if I don't go soon, I'm going to get in trouble with my wife. So I'm worried about that. Next week, we're going to have a guest, aren't we? Mark Pollard from Vantage Law.
Yeah.
A lawyer. What are you saying that for? Well, we're going to be talking about dealing with traumatic events.
Yeah.
I think he's going to give it in.
Which is something he does a lot of.
So that's next week. In the meantime, visit the website livingthepresent.co.uk for more tips, tidbits, and freebies and what have you.
And don't worry about it.
And do not worry, man. Yeah, it's all going to be okay. I've got Chill Out FFS. That's my bit of advice. Don't ask what FFS means. If you don't know, you don't want to know. Sean, have yourself a good week.
I will.
And
you
everyone
take care.
Out there in the world, take care and don't worry.
See you. Bye.
Ciao. See you.